It's the best, hands down.
It's crystal clear.
I love it. The things you can make are awesome.
No one else has quality epoxy like this.
It's easy to mix.
Tim is such a wealth of knowledge.
It's gotta be iCoat.
Welcome to the Resin Mastery Podcast, exploring iCoat epoxy. So welcome back to Resin Mastery, exploring iCoat epoxy. Rachel, I know you're feeling a little under the weather, but Merry Christmas, and how are you feeling today?
Other than feeling a little bit under the weather, I'm feeling fantastic. I'm so excited for today's. How are you feeling, Ian?
It's great. We've had a lot of really good feedback. It's going to be our first interview with an amazing guest. For all our listeners out there who've been following us and been sending in questions, if you do want to be featured on the show, send it into our email that's attached to the podcast, and we'll review that and we'll see if there's a spot for you on there. But today we're really excited to be joined by Olivia Lee, who is up in Ontario, Canada. And she's just shown us the most amazing dusting of snow outside of her window. Yep. So, Olivia, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thanks for having me here. This is so
absolutely
exciting.
And for everyone who doesn't live in Canada, for Canadians, 6 inches is a dusting. So,
you know. And for anybody in Arizona, I've only ever seen snow twice and touched it once. And I learned that snowball fights really hurt your hands.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'd make it up there in Ontario.
Yeah, it's always funny for people who don't live in the snow. The idea of playing with the snow lasts a lot shorter than I think the body can handle.
Yeah.
Everything gets cold quicker. So it's about knowing, you know, how to handle that sort of stuff. So Olivia, let's dig into your story, because you have an amazing story. And when you actually shared the depth of how you got into this industry with me, I was really wowed, because there's not a lot of people who can do what you've done in the short time that you've done it, master a subject matter that quickly, and have just made the most amazing business out of it. You change lives with it. You, as we were saying earlier, you can make so much money to take with you, but the memories that you make in life, the times you have with other people and marriage and relationships, they're the things that make a difference. So tell our audience a little bit about how you got into this whole world of epoxy resin and flower preservation.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. Thanks for having me, Ian and Rachel. I'm really excited to be here. It has been quite the journey in a short period of time. I can't believe how it's evolved, and I guess just shy of 5 years now. My whole journey was kind of born out of the pandemic. I was a student. I was studying social services. I was a bartender and server, as I feel like so many people are while they're going through their studies. During the pandemic, there was just nothing, right? There was no restaurants that were open. School was shut down. We were doing some online courses, but the majority of the program was actually shut down. And everyone was just at home, you know, left to their own devices. So I had so much extra free time, as you know, everyone probably experienced as well. And I learned very quickly, I don't do well with free time. it's something I've always struggled with, but you know, trying to be productive, making the most out of the free time that I have. So the novelty wore off quite quickly, and I found that I had to, you know, get my hands dirty, start finding other ways to be creative, pass the time, and also be productive with it. So, I was painting again. I've always been a gardener, but I was spending a lot of time gardening, designing. I was kind of thrown into the world of interior decorating and design, which I still love, and it's still a huge passion of mine, but kind of dabbled into some YouTube videos. I'm like, oh, there's this medium called epoxy. Never heard of it before. Never worked with it before. And I was just immediately blown away. It's so versatile. The amount of things that you can do with it is just, it's incredible. It's astounding. So I ordered my first kit of epoxy, started preserving daisies in coasters. That was the first thing I ever made. And I gifted a set of coasters to my girlfriends. And that night when I brought them over, they're like, you absolutely need to make an Instagram page. these are awesome. These are so cool. I've never seen anything like it. So that night we were sitting there together and I made an Instagram page, and that night it kind of took off. And ever since, it was June 2020 actually. Yeah. So ever since that first night, I've been absolutely honored to have been swamped with orders. And, you know, people wanted these Daisy coasters. And then from there, it kind of took off. But I knew I wanted to start small. I think it's important to start small, especially when you have a medium that you're working with that is, it's not the cheapest medium, obviously. Mm-hmm. I always advise my clients who are just getting into it, you know, start small, dip your toes before you take on these huge projects, take on these irreplaceable items of your clients, right? You don't want to take on too much before you don't have a thorough understanding of how it works. So it took about a year before I took on my first bridal bouquet. And then ever since then, I've just completely thrown myself into bridal preservations, memorial work, birthday, everyday flowers. It doesn't have to be a special event, but I no longer really make just small pieces like those coasters. I make tables, larger display pieces, and I still do make coasters. They're still one of my best-selling items, but alongside all these other big, beautiful projects. So yeah, it's been amazing. Last November, November 23, I started my consultation services. So I work remotely with people all over the world, and it's been absolutely amazing. It's definitely my favorite part of my business, just getting to know people from all walks of life who are interested in getting started with resin, or, you know, people that have been working with it for years that want to dabble into different areas of it. Say they're just working with, you know, colored pieces, they haven't preserved flowers per se. And it's been absolutely fantastic. I just love it.
So you have an amazing entrepreneurial spirit, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's what drives a lot of people to do special things. Like when you're consulting with people, can you tell whether this person's got a chance of making it, or this person's really going to struggle based on them having that same sort of get up?
And that's a great question. And I actually do have a little bit of a hint at what people are going to either focus on or excel at, or whether they're going to keep pursuing it at all. And it's all based on the attention to detail and the passion that they're bringing forward in our consultation. So if I don't hear that enthusiasm, that excitement, that passion, it's not likely that they're going to continue on. You have to love it or it just won't work out. Mm-hmm. And that's why I've continued on after 5 years. I just love it. And I have a passion for it. You're always learning. The goal is to never stop learning. I'm still learning things all the time, and I'm teaching people every day. So you can kind of get a sense of what people are like when you're chatting with them, whether they're going to keep up with it. It's really based on the enthusiasm that they show in our meetings.
You know, I asked that, Olivia, as well, because I have a background in the music industry as well, where I used to be able to tell pretty quickly whether, okay, this person's just wants a quick, easy hit. They're not really in it for the slog. There's a thing called the law of undulation. You have these peaks in life where everything's great, everything, you can't make a mistake. And then you have these valleys where everything's going against you. And it's being able to make it through those times. And I think you could talk to everyone from Warren Buffett through Elon Musk or anybody, and they will tell you, you're going to have those downtimes. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're struggling and it feels like every move you make is wrong.
Yeah.
But it's being able to get through that, to get back to that joy of the peaks. 100%. And when you look back, can you tell us a little bit about any of the valleys that you've been through?
100%. I'm self-taught, and the reason I felt comfortable offering consultation services is that I've made every single mistake that you possibly can make, and being able to overcome those obstacles and learn from it instead of letting them get me down, using it as a learning opportunity. And, you know, how did I overcome that? How did I fix that? At the beginning, it felt like every single time I was working in the studio, it was like everything was working against me. It was like a hurdle I couldn't overcome. It was because I didn't understand the processes enough. I hadn't done it enough. I hadn't practiced enough to know what to expect out of it. And once you get those hours down, once you get that practice in, you know exactly what to expect. The amount of problem solving that you can do in just a short amount of time is incredible. The way I think about things is completely different now, not even just related to floral preservation, but cause and effect. Like if I do this, this is the likely outcome that I'll get from it, and how I can kind of think about things differently. And if I do this, you know, this is what I should expect to happen. It's interesting because I notice those tiny little things I think about things carry over into different areas of my life. And I think that's probably one of my favorite things about, you know, it's funny because I don't consider myself a master of anything. I'm still learning, like I said, but when you master something, when you can figure it out, when you know exactly what to expect, at that point, can you kind of start focusing on being creative, being more artistic with it, instead of it just being a challenge that you're trying to overcome?
Olivia, I have been having this thought, and it was while I was journaling, and I thought to myself, like, just the phrase, education must come before execution. And I didn't really know where I was going to apply that. It was in my journal, but I was like, you know, like, yeah, that's a good thing to think about. And do you think in your personal experience that that is one true? And the second part to that question is, what is the most common mishap or mistake that you've seen amongst the people that you're helping and amongst yourself?
I think that's 100% true. And I love that, education over execution. I think it's so applicable to this situation, floral preservation. It's a foundational process, as all these pillars, these foundational pillars, as I call them with my clients, you have to get those processes in check before you can start working on different things and expanding the artistic side of the floral preservation world. Like, they're basic concepts. And if you don't have those, you're going to fail regardless. So I think it's 100% true. And I love the way you've put that. It's really, really common when you're first starting out, when you don't have those processes in check, when you don't have all the materials that you need to be successful, to experience bubbles, micro bubbles. I think everyone has gone through them at some point. How to combat them, what to do to reduce them. I remember right back at the beginning, before I had my vacuum chamber, the room set up, my ambient working temperature and humidity was all off. All those things were working against me. My flowers weren't dried correctly, right? So when your flowers still have moisture in them, moisture is going to release more bubbles when the flowers are preserved in epoxy. Okay, yeah. All those things kind of work against you, right? So it's super common for artists who are just starting out to experience micro bubbles. And I remember intimately when I was first starting out, you were chasing those bubbles every time you were pouring. The whole time you were worried about those bubbles. And now I literally pour my resin and leave the room. Like, I know I'm good to go because I'm going to trust my materials. I'm going to trust my processes to be there because I know exactly what to expect. Right. And it didn't feel like such a challenge every single time. I'm like, oh my God, there's more. They're coming out from everywhere. And now I know, like, I step back, give it a minute, let my resin do its job, and they're going to be gone by the time I go look at them again, right? I don't have to worry about those tiny little micro bubbles because they're not going to be there when I go check on them again. So I always say to my client, let your resin do its job. iCoat is an incredible epoxy because it does its job for you. You want your materials to work for you, not the other way around. I'm not, you know, spinning in circles trying to figure out why I'm getting bubbles, because my resin is doing its job. This is why I buy good materials. So I can enjoy the process more, so I can spend more time being creative rather than just chasing bubbles the whole time. So everyone kind of goes through that at the beginning. Everyone has those hurdles that they're trying to overcome. And this is why I wanted to offer those services, because as a self-taught person, I've been through it all. I've literally been through it all. If you're going to tell me of a specific issue that you've had, I'm going to commiserate with you all day long on it. I know exactly how you feel. I've been through the exact same thing. So that's probably one of my favorite parts about chatting with other people. Everyone in the floral preservation world typically has those same obstacles that they're trying to overcome. And someone who has figured out a way to overcome them can save you all that time, that misery, that money that you're going to waste trying to fix them. So yeah. I just love when clients, my consultation clients, I need to specify because I have, you know, my commissioned work clients and consultation clients. Mm-hmm. But all those clients who are investing in my consultations right off the hop are going to save all that time and money making those mistakes. They're still going to make them. And I always tell my clients, you're going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. It's all about how you learn from them, how you overcome those mistakes. But here's what I can offer you to help save you that time, because you're going to come across these regardless.
Right.
And this is how you're going to fix it, right?
So I'll tell you this. I've had many times when I've called Tim and said, hey, let's get together. He's like, I can't. I'm working on this. I'm working on that. His fixation on product is, I've never seen it with many other people in many other industries. And I've worked in supply chain, I've worked in legal, I've worked in Fortune 500 companies. He has a fascination with making it right, which goes way above and beyond. And so thank you for that as a testament to that, Olivia, as well. And he deserves it. But one thing I would ask is, how trembling were you the first day you got somebody's wedding bouquet to preserve?
I was a little bit anxious. I was nervous. It's funny you ask, because I look back at those first works that I put out and absolutely cringe. Like, at the time, they were perfect. They were stunning. The client loved them. And that's all that matters at the end of the day, whether the client loved it. But I look back at those first pieces and I'm like, oh my goodness. But if they didn't trust me in hiring me right off the beginning, I would never have the opportunity to keep learning and keep improving and keep honing in on those skills. So I am so beyond grateful for those first clients of mine to trust me with those bouquets, because if they didn't, I wouldn't be here today. But yeah, I still look back at those photos and I'm like, oh my goodness. What did you it's just the attention to detail, because like I said, if you don't have those processes and procedures down, you can't really focus on the artistic side of things. And I was still learning all of the processes back then. So, but once you get those down, then you can focus on your attention to detail, the placement of flowers, the way they're oriented in your final piece. But back then, that's not what I was worrying about. I was worrying about bubbles. I was worrying about drying the flowers correctly, just the foundational parts of the process were what I was most concerned about, rather than the attention to detail. So over the years, obviously it shifted. I've been able to focus more on the final outcome of pieces and how flowers are placed and everything like that, and not having silica gel in your negative space. I'm very much a minimalistic artist when it comes to floral preservation. I think less is more. I think less is more in terms of, you know, interior design as well. It's just the way I like to have things in my house. And I tell my clients, everyone's style is going to be different. And that's the beauty of it. Clients are going to go with artists with different styles that they resonate with. And that's okay. You don't want to market to every single person. You want to put out work that you're proud of, right? So I put out work that I would want to display in my home, and my clients will choose me based on that artistic style. And that's the beauty of it, right? There's so many different styles out there. And I believe truly that the clients that are meant to find you will find you.
Right. Now, other than flower preservation, you mentioned coasters are still one of your biggest sellers. What are your favorite things to make, and what do you make?
Yeah, I put out a ton of coasters. They're just always going to be bestsellers. Functional art at its finest.
So functional. Though, right?
Yeah, people love functional art. I love functional art. If it's beautiful, great. But if it's beautiful and you can use it, I mean, there's nothing better than that. So other examples of functional art, I make a lot of tables. So preserved flowers in tables, little side tables, acrylic trays. They're super popular. Jewelry dishes are super popular. Ornaments have taken off like crazy. I was actually, don't take this against me, but I have never really been a huge like Christmas decorator. I don't decorate a lot, and I don't really tend to enjoy Christmas themed thing. I shouldn't say that because a lot of people aren't like that, but I'm not a fan of Christmas themed things, or really anything themed, because after that time, after that season is done, you can't have it out on display. So
back in the box.
Well, you can, but I mean, I wouldn't, you know, Valentine's Day themed things, Thanksgiving, Christmas. I'd rather display something that's a little bit more universal that you can have out and about all year long. So I do make Christmas ornaments, but I don't make them like glittery. I don't make them colored. I don't make them, you know, Christmas themed. I make them universal, so they don't have to be put away after the Christmas season. People hang them on their little cabinet knobs. You can keep them out and it doesn't look like it's a Christmas item specifically. But they've taken off like crazy. People just love the ornaments. Ring holders have been super popular, again, functional. I make sometimes I go through the list of my offerings, and I tell my clients to do this often as well. You want to go through the list of your offerings and make sure, based on a number of criteria, whether they're still working for you. Are they selling well? Can you execute them well? Do you even enjoy making them? Right. So every year or so I go through the list of the pieces that I offer and kind of review them based on that criteria. And every year I kind of hone it in a little bit more because I'd rather, like at a nice restaurant, I'd rather have a small menu that I know they will execute well than a huge menu that's just kind of mediocre, right? Yeah. I'd rather offer really good things and fewer of them than just everything I possibly can. So, I offer still a lot of stuff, but every year I kind of rein it in a little bit more.
Olivia, you talked about a lot of the things Rachel and I have discussed on the prior podcasts around, especially coasters. The fact that, you know, we're in this Hallmark world where you can make Christmas coasters and Halloween coasters and Valentine's Day coasters and July 4th coasters if you live in America, right? And you've got all these different days. And then we were actually joking on one of the episodes and mentioned there's got to be a National Epoxy Day. And Rachel looked it up and she's like, there is a National Epoxy Day.
There's a day for everything now. My goodness.
Right. And so
literally the day before or something.
Every one of those things. Rachel, that was a fun episode when we were going back and forth with that stuff.
That was a fun episode.
Yeah. But I do have a question and a thought here. So many people, and I think this is a huge folly that scared entrepreneurs or people starting out in business make, which is they think, well, Olivia's doing this so well. I know another bunch of people who are doing this. So there's no room in the marketplace for me to come in and actually make any money out of this. And it's completely wrong.
Completely.
Because usually the people who are innovators in an industry rarely become the people who dominate an industry. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're dealing in this sort of realm, you don't have to dominate it, but you'd be stunned when you take the populations of Canada, Northern Mexico, and the United States, how much actual business there is out there.
Like the wedding industry alone, I can't even comprehend.
Correct.
The scale of the wedding industry. There are enough flowers to go around. You could become a florist and find clients immediately. There are so many people in this industry that are looking for services. It's a shame because people are kind of weary about getting started in this work when there's already, you know, these well-known artists around who have a huge client base.
Right.
But not only is it the variable of proximity, right? Like just because there's people in your area that do floral preservation doesn't mean that clients aren't going to want to go to someone around the corner. Just because they offer this doesn't mean it's exactly what they're looking for. I think everyone, like I mentioned before, everyone has their own style. And I found when I first started out, like people offered really, really full, complex floral preservation, and that's beautiful in its own right, but that's not exactly what I wanted to put out. And I learned when you kind of hone in on your style, you put out work that you feel proud of, that you would want to display in your home, you're going to get a whole different client base from that are people who are also looking for that more minimalistic style or whatever your style might be. There are people looking for that. Now I first started with, you know, alcohol inks and glitter and all the different colors of the rainbow. And I learned very quickly, that's not my style, but that doesn't mean it's not someone else's style.
Right. Yeah.
who might be closer to you. So I 100% agree with you. It's just not the way you want to kind of go into business. And it kind of ties back into that question at the beginning. Those are those people who are probably not going to continue on because it's not coming from a place of passion and wanting to learn more. It's about wanting to make a dollar and, you know, have a quick business. But
it's so fear-based as well, right? These people 100%. Operate out of a place of fear. Am I going to fail doing this? Yeah. Am I not going to make any money out of doing this?
You're starting out on the whole wrong perspective. You're starting out in the perspective of failure.
Correct.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree.
Yeah, so is there any industry out there where you're doing flower preservation or memorials for people who have passed as well?
Yeah, 100%. It's always... It's touching and it's really, really difficult to put out memorial works, but it's a huge pillar of my business and that's just the way it is. But it's tough. It's definitely tough. I mentioned I came from a background of social services and I'm like through and through, I'm an empath. So working on these memorial orders that are sometimes the most tragic story you've literally ever heard in your life, they're tough. So
yeah.
It's just something the same with social services. You can't let it impact your work. You can obviously have empathy and feel for your clients and offer your love, but you cannot let it sit with you or you just can't get through the day. So, yes, I do memorial preservations. I love memorial preservations. They come with their own challenges, right? So, sometimes as well as, you know, the emotional side of things, when you're a fully booked floral preservationist that gets the majority of their business from pre-booked wedding preservations, obviously there's a date set. There's never a date set for a memorial preservation.
Correct.
So sometimes it's last minute and most of the times it's last minute. Like, hey, the service is next Tuesday. Can you fit us in? And you do what you can, but when you're fully booked, there's only so much you can do. So, I've decided, like, in terms of being able to help people who aren't booked in advance for a scenario like that, there's always ways we can go about, making sure it still works. So I can offer them instructions on how to dry their flowers on their own for me to then take at a later date, which has saved a lot of different, scenarios from me not being able to take them at all. But it is always a bit of a challenge, trying to fit them in and accommodate memorial, work when you're fully booked with wedding work.
Right. So you've got two sides of your business. Obviously the commission work and also the consulting.
Correct.
Quick question on the commission work. And then I'd love to ask you a few questions on the consulting side, which is, so on the commission work side of things, and I think you just answered a little bit of there, what's the kind of lead time that people need if they want to commission you to do something? How far in advance? What sort of notice do you need? What sort of scheduling that would help someone contact you and sort of fit that in?
For sure. Great question. Yeah. When it comes to wedding work, I fully believe that once you get your venue booked, you have your date set, you have your florist booked, go ahead and book your preservationist as far in advance as possible is greatly appreciated. I mean, might as well go and book all your vendors all at the same time, right? So that's just going to help everyone involved to be prepared. But at least, you know, 1 to 3 months is appreciated. I do my best to fit in last minute clients, but again, when you're fully booked, you're fully booked. So I mentioned I can send off instructions on how they can dry their flowers for them to then send at a later date. I can provide instructions for them to air dry their flowers, which would be completely free of cost. Obviously you can just hang them upside down and let nature take its course. And then once they're dry, they can send them off. But yeah, timeline wise, as soon as possible, I think everyone is better prepared that way, but at least 1 to 3 months, I think is ideal.
Right. And you only do that commission work within Canada, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So when I first started, I wanted to work with clients all over the world and there's so many weddings happening everywhere. And I would love to be an international artist. And I did a couple of those bouquets, but I quickly learned that even if you have your paperwork set up and for customs to be cleared for that bouquet to quickly come across the border, there's still anything that can happen at customs to hold it up. And unfortunately, when it's a fresh bouquet, any amount of time can be devastating. So for commission work, you want to get those flowers as quickly as possible. Within 1 to 3 days is ideal after an event. But say they're getting married on a Saturday, you can't ship it out until Monday. Shipping services aren't open on Sunday anywhere. So they ship it out on Monday. It takes however long to get to the border, and say it's held up at the border for, you know, 2 to 5 days, chances are that bouquet is going to be gone by the time I get it. Right. So that happened. And unfortunately that's the way it was, but I obviously learned to tweak my business and only offer my services for commission work within Canada. It's sad and I wish it wasn't the case, but that's the way it is. So yeah, I work with clients all over Canada. Luckily, our country is absolutely massive, and shipping services are quite reliable and they're quite fast. Right. So if clients are shipping out, they need to ship overnight or same day shipping. And generally, I can get them within 1 to 2 days if they're, you know, anywhere in the country.
Now, do you have for your consulting work, is there a program you have in place that you offer people? How does that work? Because I'm sure there's a ton of people out there who are saying, this is something I've always wanted to do. I love the idea of not learning from too many mistakes. If I could lean on someone like you, Olivia, and help me get over a few of the early hurdles.
Yeah, so great question.
How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So when I was kind of struggling with a plethora of things, I should say, when I was struggling with a bunch of different issues, I was kind of looking online and seeing if I could find any online courses that could help me. And I found a bunch of courses available. However, they were just basic. They had the same information. You go in on your own time. It's a pre-recorded session. You watch it and then that's it, right? And generally, I already knew everything that they were explaining. So I wanted to offer something that was 100% personalized, 100% unique to your journey. And that's why I do one-on-one consulting, one-on-one with a single client. I can do partnerships. I've worked with small teams. I've worked with large companies all over the world. So I offer different packages based on what they're looking for. So I can offer just floral drying tutorials. I can do the whole floral preservation tutorial. I can specify just resin work. So if you don't need any information regarding how to dry flowers, I wanted to make it tailored to them. And then I offer all that specific information based on what they're looking for. And then we have a follow-up one-on-one video call in live time to go through it. They're sent the information way ahead of time before our call, so they can go through it and then start kind of jotting down any follow-up questions they might have. And then we discuss in depth on our follow-up call. And that way they have the information. They're always going to have that information, but they still have that time with me to say, hey, I wasn't quite sure about this one thing you said. Can you explain that a little bit more? Or you said this, but I'm wondering something about this, just so they have that time to make it a little bit more personalized if they had follow-up questions regarding any of the information they're able to ask it. And I feel like people appreciate that, right? They get that one-on-one time with me. It's not just some online course where I'm not actually there and live with them. And I think it's been going really well. I always tweak my offerings based on the feedback I'm getting from clients. And yeah, it's been excellent so far.
So how do people get in touch with you if they want to sign up for some consulting?
Email is great. Email is the best way to get a hold of me. Instagram messages, Facebook messages, I want to just shut down entirely. Like, they're so unreliable. They're so easily missed. So yeah. I always urge people to avoid sending Instagram messages, Facebook messages, email. It's OliviaLeeResinDesigns@gmail.com.
Yeah, we'll make sure we have it for everyone in the show notes, so you'll be able to get in touch with Olivia and contact,
or even on the website. Contact form on my website is perfect as well. Just really anything but direct messages.
I've missed so many on Instagram and that.
Right? It's just not. I want to be there for my clients, and I hate missing those messages. So, email emails best, not only am I going to get back to you as soon as possible, but everything is going to be organized in one thread. So I'm able to refer back to anything that you've said. It's way more organized and efficient that way. So yeah, email is fantastic. My online website, the contact form on there is great. It goes right to my email. Anything but DMs.
Yeah, right. I have a few last questions for you. These are a few actually that we've actually heard from others that want to get into this space, and they've asked us. So I thought, well, let's pass these on to our guests, which is, what additional materials might you need to do epoxy resin projects? Like, is it obviously molds, right? But
yeah, what, great question.
I know stir and sticks, but is there anything else that's special that you use, or that you would tell someone you probably need this to do a good job?
Absolutely. It's a great question. And I always tell my consultation clients, you get what you pay for. So if you're going to invest in those high quality materials right up front, they're going to pay you back. If you keep investing in crappy materials, you're going to get some issues that you then have to spend all this time fixing, all this money fixing. So just spend the money up front, get the good stuff. So iCoat, obviously, it's the only resin I use. It's fantastic. I've dabbled in imported, domestic, super cheap. I've tried it all. I've tried all the resins, and iCoat is something I'll always come back to. So invest in high quality resin, invest in high quality molds, AAJ Molds, Modern Mold Shop, Crafted Elements here in Canada. Modern Mold Shop and Crafted Elements are both Canadian. And AAJ is in the States for all my US clients and international clients. Invest in those high quality materials. You're also going to want a vacuum chamber. It is one of the investments that you should be making up front. I fully believe that if you don't have a vacuum chamber, you probably shouldn't be offering commission works. The amount of impact that one tool has made on my business is huge. It is invaluable. So invest in that up front, and you're going to save yourself a whole lot of time and misery. If you want to start dabbling into colored works, you know, glitter, things like that, super fun to play around with. So alcohol inks, pigments, different resin pigments, glitters, mica powders. It's all super fun if you want to dabble into that. You want to invest in some quality mixing buckets, some mixing sticks. I have a very, very comprehensive materials list that I send on my consultation clients. So they have that to refer back to when they're ordering their supplies. They have this materials list, so they can just say, hey, I have this, hey, I have this, and go from there. But yeah, I would say it's super important to invest in those high quality materials if you want to put out high quality commission works.
Right. So that's amazing feedback for that answer. And my last question then, Rachel, if you have any thoughts on any last questions, my last one is something we've heard from a ton of different people. And there's such a misconception around safety. And we have an interview coming up with a lady in America who had OSHA, and they're basically the government safety organization, come into her business. They use iCoat epoxy. At the end of the day, OSHA told them, you guys are way overboard on your safety. You don't need to be using a respirator. A N95 mask will do absolutely fine in the room that you're in. So my question to you is, like, with iCoat being so safe and their MSDS forms will actually give you full details on the safety and what we recommend, but do you use any safety gear, and do you even use gloves?
So I do. And the reason I do, Ian, is because I don't think you can be too cautious when you're working with chemicals. It's not that I don't think the materials are safe. It's because, like I said, right at the beginning of our meeting, you should never sacrifice your health for your creative expression.
Correct. Yep.
So I think if you have your space set up correctly, you have proper ventilation, you probably don't need all the extra precautions, but again, I only have this one life, and I want to be sure that I'm not sacrificing my health in any way. So if I'm handling it correctly, I'm wearing gloves. I do wear my respirator. I do have ventilation. And I think, again, I mentioned it's a foundational process. And if you don't know those foundational pieces and you're operating in a way that's unsafe, you're going to probably come into some issues. So not having your room set to the right temperature and humidity can eventually cause issues. Your resin can overheat. Yeah. It's going to be unsafe. So, but if you have those in check, you shouldn't be as worried about any issues. But yeah, like I said, it's just me. That's the way I like to operate. I think you can never be too cautious anytime you're working with chemicals. Obviously, I'm different than everyone, but I always tell my clients, like, it's better to be safe than sorry. A lot of people have sensitivities.
Agreed. Yeah.
I don't. I've never had issues with, you know, rashes, hives, things like that, respiratory issues. But people do. If you have a preconceived health issue, you should be extra safe. If you have skin sensitivities, you should be extra cautious as well.
Yeah, if you're health compromised, I totally agree with that. It should be something you share. It was just really great to hear that the OSHA people who usually err on the safety side in the biggest way came in and said, wow, you guys are over the top, which I was actually thrilled to hear. Because it also goes back into what I was saying about Tim's obsession with not just making sure that it's great quality, but it's also safe.
Exactly. Yeah. If it's not safe, what's the point in doing it? Like, what's it all for? You're going to make some beautiful stuff, but at the end of the day, you're not going to be healthy. I don't think nothing is worth that, right?
Yeah. So, well, Rachel and I have joked about it. If you're stupid enough to drink it, then you've got to be.
If you want to have a shower with it, I don't know.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, little mini story. I always like to relate things that happen to me into questions just because, I don't know. That's how life works, in my opinion. You know, you start with a question and or a mistake, and then you go from there and you can ask other people, like, network your own, like, mm-hmm. like we were talking about earlier, kind of education. So yesterday I sat on one of those little power box things outside and I got up and I realized there was sticky stuff on my bottom. And I was like, no, and on my skin. Right. And I was like, oh, what is this? And it was tree sap. Right. It was a form of resin. I made the wrong decision, even being on this podcast and always talking about resin and knowing how to remove it. I was just having not a good day. I was flustered. I wasn't careful with my body or my skin. I took a hot rag and I rubbed my skin till I have a friction burn now. It sucks. It's so bad. Now, I'm wondering, have you ever got an epoxy on your skin during this process? And what were the steps that you took to get that off of your skin in a good way? Because I know that that's probably going to be somebody's number one mistake. I remember touching epoxy as a kid and it would get, I would rub it all around. It would just spread and smear and it was horrible. And that reminded me of that. And so what do you do when a little mishap does happen like that?
Yeah, so it will happen. So great question. 99% alcohol. Just use a little bit with paper towel and it'll come right off. After you use rubbing alcohol, though, you want to wash it with soap and water just to make sure the alcohol is now off your skin. Yeah. But I've learned it's the only thing that'll take resin off surfaces. So anytime there's a mishap, whether it be your skin, a surface that you might be working on, unfortunately, if you get it on your clothes, that's it.
Yeah. Yes.
You cannot get that out no matter what you try. But yes, anytime you get it on skin surfaces, just wipe it off with 99%. Anything less than that, I found, is just not as effective. So don't even bother investing in like 70%. It just won't do it as well.
Yeah.
It might work, but you might need more of it and more time. So just 99%, it'll take it right off.
Hey, and let's be clear, when we say alcohol, we're not talking about Grey Goose to get it off. We're actually talking about denatured alcohol, right? You know, just for clarity there, I don't want anyone writing into us saying, hey, I just used a whole bottle of Grey Goose and it didn't come off.
That's expensive too.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, Olivia, this has been fantastic. So to wrap us up, and again, we'll have it in the show notes, will you tell everyone how they can get in touch with you and again, what's the best way to engage?
Yes, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. Thanks for having me, Ian and Rachel. It's been super fun. So email, shoot me an email if you want to get in touch for either commission works in Canada. If you want to start learning about how to preserve florals, shoot me an email, send me a message on my website. And we can start that dialogue off. I can shoot you off all the different packages that I offer. Again, I've worked with people of all skill levels. So people that have absolutely no experience, people who have been working with it for years, individuals, partnerships, small teams, large companies all over the world. I've done it all. And I really do enjoy doing it. So shoot me an email, send me a message on my website, and I would love to get chatting. It is olivialeeresindesigns@gmail.com or www.olivialeedesigns.com. And that's Lee, L-E-I-G-H.
Olivia, this has been fantastic. Thank you for sharing so much amazing knowledge with other people. And again, like we talked about this in the pre-show, you're an inspiration. And thank you for doing what you do, because I know that what you do changes people's lives and makes people's memories rich by preserving flowers, by making them keepsakes, memorials. You know, at the end of the day, you take that to your grave with you, the amazing memories that you have in your life. And I think that if more people were engaged in, one, their passion, and two, work that makes the world a better place, then I think we all win with that situation.
Thank you so much. That was so, so kind. You've just made my day. It's Christmas Eve and I'm already in a fantastic mood, but this has been really wonderful and special. So thank you, Ian and Rachel.
Olivia, thank you. This has been awesome. So until next time on Resin Mastery, Exploring iCode Epoxy, Merry Christmas to everyone.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
And we will see you again soon.